Hello, Baker McKenzie welcomes you to Connect on Tech, a global podcast series covering legal developments on data, technology, privacy, and security that impact your business.
Hello, and welcome to the Connect on Tech podcast. I am Cynthia Cole. I am a partner in the Palo Alto office where I focus on data privacy, tech transactions, licensing IP issues, and I am thrilled to be joined with my partner, Jerome Thomas, who is co-chair of the Government Enforcement Practice Group located in Chicago. Hi, Jerome.
Hi, Cynthia. Hey, everyone.
Okay, so Jerome, we are here to talk about the SEC and the final cybersecurity rules that just passed. And I want to tell our audience, why should we care?
Yeah, good question. It's now federal law that will impact issuers, both domestic and foreign private issuers. But I think more generally, why you should care is this represents what I think is the one of the first significant and kind of, or I should say not the first, but a significant advancement in the federal regulation of cybersecurity practices, corporate cybersecurity practices, and data breach incident response. While the SEC does not have jurisdiction to tell companies how they should be managing cybersecurity risk and how they should be managing cybersecurity incidents, they do through their ability to require disclosures, require companies who have securities traded on national stock exchanges and or who file reports under the Exchange Act as issuers, either domestic or foreign private issuers. They do have the ability to require companies to make disclosures about their business and items that are material to investors. What the SEC has done here is, and we're going to just kind of keep it real here for a second, they've snuck in the back door, right? And the SEC does this all the time, but they don't have the authority to require companies to do X, Y, and Z, but they can require companies to, for example, disclose how they are going about assessing cybersecurity risk and make disclosures about that. Who on their board or which persons on their board are have cybersecurity expertise. They can't require companies to have a cybersecurity expert on their board, but they can, through the kind of the name and shame game, if you will, require companies to make disclosures about who is, if there is an expert, who does have that expertise on their board. And then presumably through the efficient market theory, allow investors to decide which companies are best and less best equipped handle the evolving risks in this new age.
Yeah, right. Oh, great. So as you were talking, I thought of another issue and question, which is how do you think this will affect disclosures overall, right, in this space?
Yeah. So I think it will, right. So historically, for the better part of the last decade plus, the SEC has issued guidance that strongly advised companies that cybersecurity risk was very likely material to investors, and strongly encouraged companies to consider disclosure of data breaches or vulnerabilities where those were material. Again, reminding companies that they had an obligation under the risk factors and management discussions and analysis section of their annual reports to include a frank discussion about the risks posed by the company and material and material, financial, operational, or legal risks, which could very well include data breaches or data security incidents. So look, this notion of companies making disclosures around or of data breaches or of cybersecurity risk has always, it's been there for the better part of, 10 to 12 years since their interpretive guidance more than a decade ago. But what this does is it puts a fine point on it. It requires companies, once they have determined that an incident is material, that they've been hit by a material incident, and we could talk about what material means, that they have to make a disclosure of that incident on a Form 8K within 4 days of the determination that the incident is material. That's new, because right now, or before these rules were adopted, companies, largely had the obligation to disclose material occurrences in the company's operations, but there was no sort of mandated time frame of when that needed to be filed. So some companies decided to file it on an 8K if they got hit. Some companies decided to file on a 10Q. Or on their 10K, but there was no sort of roadmap or mandatory within X days of determining that you've been hit by a material incident, you got to file. Now there is. So companies, once they've determined materiality, they have 4 days. Now, foreign private issuers are required to also file a 6K once they've determined that they've been hit by a material incident, although the rules are silent on within how many days. So 8K is 4 days, but the rule is silent on the number of days after the determination of materiality that a foreign private issuer has to file a 6K. So, is it going to result in more disclosures? Probably yes, because there's now a mandatory rule saying you have to disclose it on an 8K or a 6K. How much greater those disclosures are going to be? Are we going to get hit with a tidal wave, or is it something less than a tidal wave? I don't have a crystal ball. I think the easy answer, and probably the naive answer, would be we're going to get hit by a flood of 8Ks and 6Ks. I don't know that that's necessarily going to be the case, although I do expect an uptick.
So the first question is, because I know, I've already had clients asking, is how do we determine materiality, right? Like, what's the threshold? And then another sort of follow-on question on that is, because I think that this does happen, often we see cyber incidents and there will be a couple of different, there will be sort of murmurs, right? Before we get, and so there will be sort of smaller incidents or different things that happen, but then effectively there will be one that maybe larger trigger event. But then possibly later on, we determine that actually it was a whole series of events, right? So those are kind of two questions maybe, but that's sort of how I see often these things kind of play out.
Great question. So materiality, It's a standard known well to securities lawyers. The Supreme Court, when I was 3 years old, in TSC Industries versus Northway, ruled that materiality, a fact is material if there's a substantial likelihood that a reasonable shareholder would consider it important in deciding how to vote. Put another way, there must be a substantial likelihood that the disclosure of the omitted fact would have been viewed by the reasonable investor as having significantly altered the total mix of information made available. And so that's the sort of, that is the standard, right? And it was echoed again in Basic versus Levinson in 1988. But it's that, the reasonable investor, would that reasonable investor have viewed that this fact alters the total mix of information made available? So it says a lot, but it says very little. And so there's a reason why companies have both internal and external counsel advising them on securities disclosure issues, because it's as much an art, Cynthia, as it is a science. But the materiality of an incident is very much going to be judged by that total mix of information standard under Basic v. Levinson TSC Industries. Now, what you are, that second part of the question, that's kind of the devil in the details, the rubber hits the road, whatever cliche you want to use. Because the rules do a couple things that are kind of funky. First, they define a cybersecurity incident as an incident or a series of related unauthorized occurrences. And then they go on to say, so if you remember what they did in the proposed rule is they were going to require the disclosure of material cybersecurity incidents. And then they were also going to require companies to go back and look at historically immaterial incidents and aggregate them and then make disclosures if in the aggregate they would be deemed material. The SEC backed off of that, again, like we said in our alert, sort of, because then what they did is they said, well, yeah, but we're not going to require you to go back and aggregate totally unrelated events, but you guys are going to have, you guys being issuers and management responsible for disclosure and frankly, InfoSec teams and, you know, CISOs, you're going to have to look at the definition of cybersecurity incident broadly, because, for example, you could have a number of ostensibly unrelated incidents to the outside observer, but looking at them more closely from the inside, you might actually determine that they are or have reason to believe that they are material. For example, if it's the same method or the same means or the same type of malware being used or reasons to believe it's the same threat actor or group of threat actors, you might determine that a series of 8 events over the course of a year, each of them taken on their own, were immaterial. But if there's reason to believe they're all a part of the same incident because they have similar DNA, you have to group them all together. And that's going to be the series of related unauthorized occurrences. So again, you can see there they backed off the aggregation requirement, but not really. They're still going to require, and Commissioner Hester Pierce read her fellow commissioners the Riot Act as a part of her release on the rule, where she said the final rules don't really address the issues with the aggregation because, for example, will companies under this new approach nevertheless have to develop new costly systems to track immaterial events, noting that the final rule leaves the related part of cybersecurity incidents undefined. So she hits on the very point you're hitting at, which is, although they dropped the aggregation standard, it's not like they really dropped it. They kind of left it in, and essentially it was a put option back to the company saying, well, if you don't want to disclose, you know, totally unrelated immaterial events and aggregate them, you are going to have to do some homework to make sure that prior events that may or may not have been related, you're still going to have to track them and make sure that they're not related. Because if they are, you're going to have to make disclosures. And by the way, unsaid in there, but clearly what's being said to me as an SEC enforcement lawyer is if you're not tracking, going back and tracking those events, and you're not doing your homework to make sure that a series of events could be related, and we, the SEC, determine that they are, and you haven't done that, that's going to be grounds for enforcement action, I suspect, right? I'm waiting for that enforcement action, right? It's not going to come next year, but it will come, and it will come out of the vagaries of how cybersecurity event is defined.
Right. No, I agree. And then I guess, so then my follow-on question on that, Jerome, is there then an obligation, you know, say you've met or you go back and you're tracking and you determine that in fact it was this whole series in the past. Do you have to go back and amend prior disclosures, or can you just, is it just going forward? Or then, I mean, how do you deal with that, right? Practically?
Well, so keep in mind that the obligation to, if you haven't filed an 8K, Cynthia, for an incident because you haven't done, you haven't made a disclosure about the incident, then you either disclose on an 8K, right? I mean, you're getting into now, what is the disclosure practice? I mean, the you know, probably one way you would have to go about doing that is file an 8K. If you haven't made any disclosures about the incident previously, I don't know what you're actually going to go back and change, right? But the question is, have you disclosed the incident timing, right? You know, within 4 days of determining that an incident is material, have you disclosed it? If you blow the 4 day disclosure window once you've determined it's material, that's going to be probably another basis that the SEC would look to pursue enforcement actions, although I would suspect there would have to be other circumstances present before, you know, that was a serious enforcement action, but technically it's a violation of these rules, so they could. But in terms of going back and correcting prior disclosures, it's, you know, I don't see that so much as an issue as I do if you haven't disclosed it and you blow the 4 day window, it's likely going to be fodder for the SEC to use in a potential enforcement action.
Got it. Well, I think we're running. This is super interesting. And as always, I love talking to you, but almost as much as I enjoy, you know, playing music with you, right? So I guess what, like, you know, if you had one sort of tip, you know, what would it be for issuers?
Make sure you are using reasonable efforts to track incidents using the same language and the same way for determining what their consequences are, i.e. materiality. And what do I mean by that? What I've seen in my practice, right, is that companies track incidents largely through their InfoSec team or their corporate security team. And they track incidents and the findings of the incidents and you know, who the threat actor was and what the potential access or consequences was. In my experience, oftentimes there's an inconsistency in terminology and inconsistency sometimes in the way that determinations are made, significance, malware involved, and that can cause headaches down the road. Now the company's going to have to go back and actually determine whether incidents are related or not. So companies thinking ahead to this rule and what it means in practice need to make sure that whatever function of the team manages the tracking and remediation of security incidents, data breaches, needs to make sure that they are tracking the determination and conclusions in the remediation using consistent terms that, frankly, the legal department and the board and management understand. Right? That's the other thing, is oftentimes the InfoSec team or the corporate security team could be using language that is completely foreign and difficult to understand and, frankly, unnecessarily complicated and for non-techies to understand. And the reality is we're now in a world that those determinations and that language actually needs to make sense, because there's a real legal obligation for it to make sense. Because if nobody can make sense of it, that's also another basis for the SEC, I believe, to pursue a case, right? They've always got their, they also have the disclosure controls and procedures, which they use all the time. The requirement that, companies maintain appropriate securities disclosure controls and procedures. And they've used that theory in data breach cases all the time, right? If a company doesn't have a good process in place to track whether incidents are material and therefore need to be disclosed. For example, if there's just a lack of coherency or consistency in the way they track incidents, I could see the SEC using that as a basis for securities disclosure controls and procedures theory down the road. So again, this rule has kind of, I think, put a lot of ammunition, a lot of arrows in the SEC's cyber enforcement quiver.
That's a really good point, Jerome, because it also really makes me think that, and your point on consistency and language and tracking and making sure that even companies that already have in place, you know, what I would consider to be really good incident response plans, right, should be making sure that the, again, that the language is translating, right, so that, yeah, I think that's a great point.
Yeah, and we saw this coming as a part of the SEC's SolarWinds investigation sweep, where they sent letters to every public company that used SolarWinds, asking them, you know, a whole host of questions on their use of SolarWinds and their exposure as a result of that. But a part of what they were also asking in that SolarWinds sweep was that, for you to disclose how you handled and how you ultimately brought down other data security incidents. And so what they were getting at there, I firmly believe, is they were trying to understand how companies were grappling with and making decisions around what security breaches to disclose and which ones not to disclose. And I think that informed the aggregation proposal, which ultimately got then morphed into this series of related occurrences aspect of the final rule. They saw that companies got hit, I firmly believe, with a number of incidents. And I also believe that the SEC saw that companies from at time to time struggled with how they labeled those incidents, how they determined whether the significance of, you know, whether they were tracking whether information was exfiltrated or not, whether customer information was accessed, what the potential impact of that could be. I think they saw that wasn't being consistently tracked within companies and certainly across companies. And I think that informed this aggregation and ultimately the related incidents approach that we see in the final rule.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I agree. Well, thank you so much, Jerome. As always, it's a pleasure. And I think there will be more to come on this topic. And so thank you.
No. Thank you for having me. This was great. And we'll do this again. There's a lot to cover on this topic. Probably makes sense to kind of talk once we see some enforcement actions by the SEC next on this. All right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you for listening and stay tuned for our next podcast when we connect on tech. For more information on data and technology, subscribe to our blog at connectontech.com or visit our website at bakermckenzie.com.